This is Brewers on Tap.
Here we go, episode number 9 of Brewers on Tap, the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm Jeff Levering, your host of the podcast, and don't forget to get involved with each and every episode of Brewers on Tap by submitting your questions to @Brewers on Twitter by using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. The Brew Crew is still trying to figure it out here in 2015. You'll have flashes of brilliance with the pitching staff, occasional outbursts from the offense, the infield still trying to figure out their defense. But once all those facets come together, I think it's going to be a pretty good season. Got to start winning some series. That's going to be the key to it. Win 2 out of 3, win 3 out of 4, and inch your way back towards 500. This club's going to be awfully competitive here pretty soon. So without further ado, let's get ourselves into the podcast this week with This Week in Brewers History.
And now, this week, the Brewers' history.
Back on April 29th, 1980, the Milwaukee Brewers hit 7 home runs in a 14-1 win at Cleveland, setting a franchise record for most home runs in a game. First, it was Ben Ogilvie, who hit one in the second inning. Paul Molitor and Sixto Lezcano hit homers in the third. Larry Heisel hit a 3-run blast in the fourth. Sal Bando then went deep in the fifth, and he and Ogilvie both homered again in the eighth. The Buck Rogers-led Brewers finished the 1980 season at 86-76, and oddly enough, the 14-1 blowout of the Indians wasn't the Brewers' largest blowout of the year. That came 17 days prior, when the Crew took it to the Boston Red Sox by a final score of 18-1. As we mentioned, the Crew's still trying to get it going and play that full cohesive game. But over the last week, we've had some flashes. Great starting pitching. We've had some good offensive days as well. But one constant has been Adam Lind. Had a couple of big home runs. The bench has come up with a couple of big hits here and there. And none bigger than Elian Herrera's 2015 debut, which was a grand one. Aramis Ramirez hit his first home run of the season. Kyle Loesch was able to snap the Brewers' 8-game losing streak with a 7-inning gem against the Reds. And Logan Schaefer in Cincinnati just a couple of nights ago, who's seen his playing time increase over the last week, made a dazzling catch at Great American Ballpark. So let's go back and listen to some of the plays of the week.
Here comes Homer, and that one's hit to left and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Rami! There's number one for him, and he's been waiting for that for a long time. 3-1 delivery, Adam Lind sends it to left center in the gap. Extra bases, get up, get out of here, and gone for Adam Lind. He just hit one out of here to the Brewers' bullpen.
2 strikes and nothing to Adam Lind. There's a drive, hit back into right field. John Jay going back, looking up, it is gone. Adam Lind, a 2-run blast, and it's 3-0 the Crew.
Two from Loesch. Strike 3 call. Fastball in at the knees on the inner edge. Loesch ready, the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Threw him a slider on the inner third. Deals again. Bruce struck out swinging. Swinging a fly ball to left. Davis drifting underneath it. He'll make the catch, and the inning is over. So Kyle Loesch at 89 pitches through 7 innings.
There's a drive to right field, and it is gone! Grand slam! Elian Herrera! Game on at Miller Park! Here's the 0-1 coming to Phillips. Gets it in the air to center field. Back goes Logan Schaefer at the wall, reaching up, and he pulls it down. Oh, a big-time catch by Logan Schaefer up against the wall.
Now it's time of the podcast where we catch up with the crew. And this week, we dive back down into the minor leagues where a couple of weeks ago, I had an opportunity to catch up with talented prospect Monte Harrison, 19-year-old out of the Kansas City area who was one of the top 50 draft picks in the 2014 Major League Baseball draft. He's beginning his first professional season up north in Appleton with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. And here is Monte Harrison.
Let's catch up with the crew.
Monte Harrison of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers joins us now in the program. And Monte, this is your first full season of pro ball. How has the adjustment gone? Obviously, this time last year, you're playing in a high school season, and now you're playing against guys that are throwing you 95 fastballs up and in and stuff, and then sliders down and out. How's the adjustment been so far for you?
It's been rather smooth. Just coming from high school, you know, you can get up there and pretty much do whatever you want. You can try all kinds of stances and joke around and still go 3-for-4 in a day and the day still not be good enough. But just going 1-for-3 a day here is just it's a good day. But there's a lot of adjustments you have to make, and the game is faster, but I don't know, I feel like I can make the adjustment to slow the game down.
Talk a little bit about you mentioned the adjustments. You go from high school ball to pro ball last year in the middle of things. You end up stealing 32 bases in the Arizona League. But then this year, you've got your first spring training of camp. Is that the most baseball you've kind of been exposed to at one time in your life?
Definitely, yeah. Just growing up, I knew that baseball was kind of a back burner type thing. It was just playing it just to stay in shape. And just to know that I would only play it when I was younger, 2 or 3 months out of the whole year, it's kind of amazing just to come out here just to play it every day. And I don't know, it's a newfound love just to know that I get to do what I love every day.
What was the experience like for you being able to play in A games with the big league guys? I mean, coming over from minor league camp, that's something that not a lot of minor league guys get to do, especially guys that just get drafted in June prior. So what was that experience like for you?
I was very excited just to know that God's giving me the ability to do what I'm capable to do, and I give all the glory to him. But at the same time, it's a lot of hard work, and when you put your mind to something, anything can happen. And those guys accepted me over there, and they told me, hey, don't be nervous or anything like that. And just go out and play a game. You're still in the minors. It's the same ball and same bat, everything. It's just a game.
Well, you were a three-sport athlete back in high school. I'm sure you still dabble a little bit when you guys are messing around doing conditioning stuff and throwing footballs around and, you know, maybe playing some hoops in the offseason too. But you decided to play baseball instead of go to Nebraska and play football. How difficult of a decision was that for you, Monte?
It was somewhat difficult just to know that I really like the Nebraska program, just to know that Bo and all of them, all those guys gave me a lot of respect. And it was just a certain type of feeling you get with a person that I knew I had that connection with them. And I don't know, it was rather hard where I had to call them and make the decision and tell them that I was going to play baseball. But then again, it was easy just to know that I knew where my heart was and they knew where it was. So every single day from now, they wish me the best of luck. I still have those guys hit me up, and they still give me good luck on everything.
Well, what's interesting is that you just mentioned that baseball is kind of on the back burner of the other two sports, and now you're a pro player. You're, you know, second round pick, one of the first 50 guys taken, and now this is your profession. Is that at 19 years old? Does that kind of blow your mind at times?
It's still kind of weird to me just to know that I'm playing a professional sport. I remember when I was a little kid. One day I got mad at my mom, and she said something to me, and she was like, you need to do your homework. And I was like, oh, I don't need homework because I'm going to be playing professional sports one day. And after that, I really didn't know how to go about it. I kind of just went about and worked hard every day, and I really tried to prove to myself that I could actually do it, and it actually came true.
You feel like you're improving every single day that you come to the ballpark?
Oh, definitely. I try to learn something new every day just to know that just not – something big, just something little every day that can help you in some type of way. Just it's very fun to me. And I know high school, I know books and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I could go to class and learn stuff like that, blah, blah. But just to come out here and actually do something you love, it's kind of amazing just to know it could either be about hitting, running, fielding, anything. Just something about something in the stands, people. Or, it's rather amazing.
Monte Harrison is joining us now on the program. And Monte, after you got drafted, you're a guy from Lee's Summit, which is just south of Kansas City. And so I'm sure you grew up a Chiefs and a Royals fan, but we don't need to talk about that. They can be your American League team if you want to. Had you ever been to Wisconsin before?
I actually haven't. This is my second time being here, other than when they brought us up here from for the after the draft. And, I don't know. So far, it's pretty cool.
Take me through draft day. What was that like for you?
It was rather wild, just to know. I wake up, and actually, I couldn't sleep at night at all, just to know that anything could happen, because I knew those guys, what those scouts and everything were thinking, whether he was gonna, I was gonna go play back and play football, and the Brewers knew what I wanted to do, and that's why they drafted me. And it was a hard day, but then again, it was a easing day, just to know I got drafted.
So you get drafted, then they bring you out to Miller Park, and you met just a couple of random people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a couple of random people. I wouldn't say Hank Aaron's a random person, but I don't know, just to know that he's done things in his game, especially as a African-American guy, and me being African-American, it's just amazing just to know that I get to play the game.
And you got to shake Hank Aaron's hand. I mean, that's pretty cool in itself.
Yeah, just to know that not most people can do that, but I don't know. I'm not really the type of person just to like gloat about big name people like that. I try to treat him as a normal person because that's how I want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. He's just a normal, typical guy. Just happened to be really famous in baseball.
Well, I'm glad I pulled that out of you. That's what I was trying to do. So you're doing pretty well with this media savvy thing already, which is a good thing. So you and Cody and Jake, you guys are all drafted within the first 50 picks. You know, some guys are talking about you being the big three or the three amigos or whatever you guys want to call each other. Is it kind of cool to know that you have a potential to get through the system kind of the same way at the same time?
Yeah, it's really cool just to know that. But it's kind of hard just because, like, we don't really get to be as much with Cody like me and Jake. So we get to see him on the field. Other than that, he's kind of always – they have, like, their own time schedule. But it's going to be fun just to know that we get to come up together and be the big three, as they say.
Well, the pitchers and the catchers, and they kind of hang out by themselves, and you got the infielders and the outfielders that kind of do their own thing. So you got to mix it up a little bit and get everybody in there.
I don't know. We kind of have a mixed feelings about the pitchers. they do certain things, and I don't know, just kind of pitcher-only thing. And I was like, all right, they can't hang with us. But it's kind of a joking thing. But
they are a different breed, especially the lefties too.
Oh, definitely, especially Cody. I wouldn't want to face Cody, and I feel sorry for any hitter that has to face him. And just to know that I probably would go up there and just watch pitches. I wouldn't even swing. I'd just be like, hey, you got me this time. Like, whatever.
Yeah, just tip your cap. All right, so you're obviously in the Brewers organization. You know who Bob Uecker is, right?
Yep.
He's obviously the broadcaster, and I'm sure you've seen Major League once or twice. Mm-hmm. Can you do a Bob Uecker impression at all?
Just a bit outside.
That's pretty good. That's not. I'm going to make the other guys do it too, so don't worry about it. Do you have any others than just a bit outside?
I just always remember him saying like ball one, like just little stuff like that. But I don't know. I love watching Major League, and when I actually found that out, I was like, I remember this guy for something. They was like, yeah, he's from Major League, and I was like, that's cool.
Kind of cool to think that maybe in a couple of years he might be talking about you on the radio.
It is, just to know he's a famous guy that does radio, and just it's kind of weird just to know that some guy like that could be potentially talking about you on a daily basis.
Monte, great job here. Continued success here in Wisconsin. I know it's a learning experience for you. I know it's chilly, but you're used to cold weather being from Lee's Summit just outside of Kansas City. So enjoy the season. I'm sure we'll be catching up with you a little bit later in the year too. But it's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit, and we hope to see you in Milwaukee real soon.
All right, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Monte's gotten off to a slow start, and the 19-year-old hitting just 151 through his first 16 games, but he did launch a couple of home runs for the Rattlers last Wednesday, including this home run.
Kansas City native drives one to left and deep. This one's got a chance. It's going to get out of here. A two-homer game for Monte Harrison.
Chris Mehring of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers on the call. Monte Harrison, a guy who once he figures it out, the sky's the limit for him. And as he talked about in the conversation, baseball was not his primary sport growing up. He was a football and a basketball guy, but now playing professionally, he gets to hone his craft on a day-in and day-out basis. And again, the sky's the limit for Monte Harrison. This last week, I had a chance to catch up with a crucial member of the Brewers coaching staff, and that's coaching assistant and digital media coordinator Joe Crawford in this week's edition of Let's Break It Down.
Let's Break It Down.
Now it's time to truly break it down this week as we chat with coaching assistant and digital media coordinator Joe Crawford. Joe, this is obviously an expanding role, almost it seems like on the day. So talk a little bit about what you do, what your role is on a day-in and day-out basis here with the Brewers.
Well, you're absolutely right. I started in 2004, and from then to now, the job has changed dramatically, mostly with the technology that's available to us. So I guess my job is mostly the video, using it for advanced scouting against the teams that we're going to be playing, breaking down like that night's pitcher, what they're going to do, helping the guys use video to get a good visualization of the person they're going to be facing. Same for the pitchers, looking at the hitters. And the other part of the video is we use a lot of it for our coaches. I'm always trying to stay ahead of the game. I'm usually a series or two ahead, trying to prepare the video for that. We use video extensively to break down. And luckily, the programs we use that are with the video have a lot of data. And so a combination of the both with the numbers is how we get that done.
So how big is video nowadays? I mean, you saw, you know, Tony Gwynn back in the day. He would go in and video himself. Some people call him the pioneer of going back and looking at videotape. But since you started in this industry, you know, on the video side of things, how has the technology changed what you do and how the players use it?
Oh, the technology, without getting into, like, really technical stuff, it has changed dramatically. The players have also changed, and the reason they've changed is they've grown up with technology. When I first started this job, coaches wanted no part of a computer. They thought it was going to bite them. They were scared to death of them. Understandable. It's not really their era. But that has changed. Players used to use video. They just wanted to see that third called strike on them was really a strike so they could go back and yell at the umpire. Now, these guys, they're so technically savvy. It's a lot easier for me in that sense as far as trying to get them to use it. They're right on it. We have it in the minor leagues now, so most of the guys that come up, they don't miss a beat. The hardest part for me is keeping up with the technology and the different companies that are out there and what they provide and what they offer, and it just keeps getting better and better. There's a lot of stuff, you know, sometimes maybe too much. So trying to get that narrowed down to what players need to see isn't always what they want to see. So, it's a revolving door in my video room. It's amazing.
And guys are not only going in there between at-bats. You can't do it between pitches. I think some guys might want to. But you're talking about guys that as soon as they get out, they want to go in there and rewind what they just saw.
Yeah, you know, and that's – I guess there's pros and cons to that. Being a former player, you know, I'm back in that room a lot, and I would give a lot to be able to be out here in the dugout and the feel of the game and the smells and the sounds and be out here rooting your teammates on. So guys have to kind of find a happy medium between running back up after they're at bat and seeing what the pitcher tried to do to them, with also knowing what's going on in the game and being out here for your teammates. So, you know, guys usually finally figure out what they're going to do, and everybody's different. Some guys are up there a lot. Some you'll never see, you know. Some only when they're going bad, some only when they're going good. But everybody pretty much uses it to some degree or another.
It's pretty wild. We were talking earlier today about the fact that you're working on the Dodgers, you're working on the Cubs and the White Sox, and the guys that are coming in for the next homestand. And right now we've got the Cardinals here, and then we go out on the road for the Reds. So for you, is it hard for you to separate what you're doing in the future? And you're going, oh, that's right, we're not playing the Cubs today. We got the Cardinals today.
Yeah, I'm the world's master note taker. I have notes everywhere. I kind of start to feel like I'm like Jay Horowitz with the long time with the Mets, who I came up with. You know, Jay had an old notebook, and every time you asked him for something, he just kind of scribbled it in the corner. And I was like, he's never going to remember that. There's like 1,000 people coming at him, but he always did. And now I kind of find myself like that because you're right. There's all the game day preparation. I'll get the hitting coach. Hey, can we get Mike Leake? You know, or hey, I need other stuff like scouting reports and different templates paper-wise that coaches actually use. And so you get things that just come up all the time while you're still trying to get that day's stuff prepared, as well as, you know, looking down. You know, our thing upstairs, we're always trying to our biggest thing is trying to find out how far down the road we can figure out the starting pitcher for the other teams. I'm trying to see who the Cubs and the Dodgers are, but that information just isn't quite solid enough for me to get started, because whenever I can get a head start, I like to do it. But, you know, in this game, things change quickly. So as soon as I think I've got the lineup right, four new guys come up for a team.
And you got weather problems, too, so you can get doubleheaders. There's a lot going on there. Chatting with Joe Crawford. And Joe, a big part of today's game, the advent and the usage of video replay. You know, it's a legal thing to do now. What kind of role do you have in that process? And we were talking earlier that on the road, you're the guy that Ron Reneke is going to call and say, hey, listen, back that thing up. And now it's almost instant where you've got to have that video.
Yeah, you know, it's we have Brian Pawlish and Scott Campbell. They do it at home. It's in the room within our room, mm-hmm. and those guys write our hitting and pitching scouting reports. You know, they have a lot on their plate and they do a great job. So at home, they do it. We all see the video and we're all yelling whether you know, yeah, channel, yeah, we'll do that. No, it's really tough. You're right, because even like with now this year, how they're trying to keep the manager from having to go out in the field. I know the fans perceive that as it takes a long time, all slowing down the game. My personal opinion is if we do go to replay, the replay people get all the time in the world to replay it. You know, everybody has all the time in the world except for us. Mm-hmm. And we are also, those angles all come from TV trucks. So sometimes, like if you happen to be at a stadium that has the Phantom Cam, the super slow replay, that takes a second for the producer who's, you know, the director and a producer in the truck to say, oh yeah, put that feed on air. That's when we get it. So we don't get to see some things immediately. We can't immediately rewind the game, but there's a lot of pressure on us because as soon as a controversial play happens, boom, that phone rings and it's picked up and they want an answer. And you know, you've got to have a good keen set of eyes. More than one set of eyes helps. Like I said, on the road myself with one of those two guys, they take turns coming on the road. We do it on the road. And you know, the pressure is definitely on the replay guy. And I know that's different person and different personnel for, depending on what team it is, who they choose to have do that. But I don't think people really realize it's pretty important because you can make or break it and make it, you know, a game. It could be a guy at third base that's your winning run. And we have to make that call really, really quickly. And I'm not going to lie to you, it can be a little nerve-wracking.
No doubt, sweating bullets. And you better have that good camera angle, too. How much do you work with the producers and the directors? Do you have conversations with them before a series, especially if you're on the road, too?
Yeah. Well, obviously, like, for example, our people who cover our games all the time, the TV people, they fly on the planes with us. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you can't really, on a game-by-game basis, or even actually pick the phone up and call the truck because that's illegal. MLB doesn't want you to do that, and I get that. But, like, when this was all going down and it was starting to formulate and they were like, oh, you know, replay is going to happen, you try to brainstorm what kind of problems could come up. And, you know, in passing, you talk to somebody that works for the TV and the television people and, you know, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think every team has done that just to kind of – I mean, you have to. You don't want to not have that advantage. And I'm sure home, you know, clubs try to – or I should say home TV people try to help their team out. But both teams, both replays, the visitors and the home, they all get all – whatever angles are available, both teams get them. It's just a matter of how quickly, like a really good replay – can the truck get to that replay system so we can see it? Because my nightmare used to be when I played was everybody, you know, every player has that nightmare where he's sleeping and he's dreaming that he's going to pitch or hit, and then the manager wants them to do it, and you can't find your glove or your bat, and you're moving in slow motion. I think we've all had that dream in some sense. Now my worst nightmare is I say, oh, nope, we don't have a good angle. And then after the play continues, the TV goes, oh, here's another angle. And then it shows that I was completely wrong.
Or the Wi-Fi goes out and you don't have a connection. I think that might even be more difficult for you.
Yeah. Well, if we have technical difficulties, the good thing is the umpires are great about it. We tell the manager. The manager lets the umpires know. The umpires go and talk to the other. And if it's just flat out not working, then neither one can use it.
Sure.
Or if we have, you know, or if you have technical difficulties, then they'll be like, we'll give you extra time. So the umpires have actually been great about it.
That's good. Well, Joe, we've got one more question for you, and it comes from the Twitterverse, and it doesn't really have to do with video replay, even though you probably could for this particular question. But from one of our fans, who can take down a plate of food more, or if there is more food on a plate, who's going to take it down, you or Kuz? That's the big question I think everybody wants to know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I feel like if I got into a competition, I would do pretty well. I try to control myself, but, you know, sometimes, you know, man's got to eat. But I'm going to tell you right now, Kuz, Marcus Hanel, I've seen that boy do some damage. And I would have to say I would definitely be playing second fiddle to Marcus. I've seen him at work. and it's a sight to behold.
You would be looking at the steak like John Candy in The Great Outdoors, right, and kind of holding onto your shirt and chewing on your sleeve instead. Oh, you can go ahead and have the old 96er.
Yeah, as much as I like food, I'm not going to eat the grizzle and the fat and all everything else just to get it for free.
Yeah.
Kuz would.
He'd do it for the T-shirt.
Yes, he would. It'd be a big T-shirt, too. Yeah.
Joe, thanks so much for breaking it down for us. And, you know, next time a replay comes up, let's make sure we've got some good angles.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Checking in on the farm.
This week's segment of Checking In on the Farm will go down to Colorado Springs, Biloxi, Brevard County, and Wisconsin. But also just wanted to let you know that I'm actually going to be headed out this next week to Colorado Springs to see the Sky Sox. And I'm looking forward to seeing one of the newest affiliates in action at Security Service Field. In minor league roster news, last week Brandon Kinstler was designated for assignment. He cleared waivers and accepted his assignment with the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. Another Sky Sox reliever, Chris Perez, opted out of his minor league deal with the Brewers on Monday, which makes him a free agent, and he can sign with any team. Colorado Springs is starting to play a little bit better baseball. It's 6-11. They've got one of the worst earned run averages in the Pacific Coast League, but that's just the nature of the ballpark in which they play. Matt Clark, he's hitting near 300. He's got 3 home runs to lead the club with 12 runs batted in. Matt Long, who broke up a no-hitter in Round Rock a couple of days ago with a 9th-inning home run. Matt Long's hitting .317 through 16 games with a homer and 8 runs batted in. He was a spring training sensation. And Luis Sardinas, who was acquired in the trade for Giovanni Gallardo with the Texas Rangers in January. Sardinas hitting .284, 9 runs batted in. And he's playing a pretty solid shortstop in Colorado Springs. On the pitching side, we got to look at Corey Knebel, who is 1-0 in 7 appearances. He's a perfect 2-for-2 in save chances with a 1.29 earned run average. The former supplemental first-round pick of the Detroit Tigers, he too was involved in that deal with the Texas Rangers for Giovanni Gallardo. Knebel with 9 strikeouts in 7 innings. And I'll have an opportunity to catch up with him in Colorado Springs next week. Down in AA, the Biloxi Shuckers on their 55-game road trip to start the season because MGM Ballpark is not quite finished yet. But Orlando Arcia, the 20-year-old shortstop sensation, he's been playing great. He's only committed 2 errors in his first 18 games, but he's hitting .386 to lead the club. He hit his first home run in AA, and he's got 9 runs batted in. Yadiel Rivera, a member of the 40-man roster for the Brewers, he's reached base in all 17 games he's played. He's hitting .357 with an on-base percentage over .400. And a trio of pitchers for the Shuckers have been throwing very well. Hobbs Johnson is 1-0 in 3 starts with an ERA under 1 at .079. Brooks Hall, 3-0 with a 1.23 ERA in 4 starts. And Tyler Wagner picked up a win on Monday night. He is now 4-0 with an earned run average just over 2. And just to make things a little bit better for that pitching staff, both Brooks Hall and Tyler Wagner have both hit home runs for Biloxi so far this season. The Shuckers are off to a 12-6 start. They've won 7 of their last 10, and they lead the Southern League South Division. Down in High Class A, the Brevard County Manatees, they're 9-9. Team earned run average under 4. Offense is starting to pull it together, but they've been led by a dynamic duo. That's Clint Coulter, who's hitting .338. He leads the organization with 6 homers and 15 runs batted in. A first-round pick back in 2012 for the Brewers. The other piece of the dynamic duo, that's Victor Roach. He's hitting .329 in 18 ballgames with 5 home runs and 18 RBIs. Roach battled injuries coming out of the draft, but since he's been healthy, he's hit at every single level and showing power to all fields. And finally, we check in on the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, who were slowed out of the gates this year at 6-12. But as we talked with their manager last week, Matt Erickson, they are one of the youngest clubs in the Midwest League. They're led this year by Cy Snead on the mound. He is 1-1 with 1.02 earned run average. In 4 games, he started 3. He has struck out 19 in 17 2/3 innings. Cody Medeiros, last week's guest, he suffered his first loss in the Midwest League, but he still owns an earned run average under 3 at 2.93. And he struck out 20 batters in his 15 1/3 innings. And Dustin Demuth, who we gave you a sneak peek of last week, he's hitting .345 in 17 games with a home run and 6 runs batted in. Jake Gatewood, the first position player selected by the Brewers in the draft, he's hitting 184 with a home run and four runs batted in as the everyday shortstop for the Timber Rattlers. And as we do each week, let's check in on what's going on in the Twitterverse.
Tweet this. Let's check in on social media.
Lots of Brewers, major leaguers, and minor leaguers alike sending out their love to the Milwaukee Bucks for their dramatic buzzer-beating win against the Bulls in Game 4 on Saturday, and also their big win in Game 5 on Monday in Chicago to bring the series back to Milwaukee for Game 6. Tremendous support from the crew for what has been a phenomenal season for Jason Kidd and the Milwaukee Bucks. Also, a number of players with the Biloxi Shuckers tweeted out photos of the ballpark in Pensacola. That's a brand new ballpark that opened just a couple of years ago, the Reds' AA affiliate. This brand new ballpark, evidently in the middle of rain and wind that were coming in so hard, the left field fence actually blew down. So not only did you have a rain delay, but a wall delay as well. The Shuckers would go on to win that particular ball game against the Blue Wahoos. And finally, in the Twitterverse, and this is not really Brewers related, but a story that's been getting some good traction over the weekend, that's Adrian Beltre of the Texas Rangers sending Angels pitcher Garrett Richards a bill for $300 for the three bats that Beltre broke in Anaheim against Richards. Richards, all in good fun, had a good time with it. He actually didn't send a check back to Beltre, but instead sent him a Garrett Richards model bat. We'll see if Beltre uses that at some point for the Texas Rangers. Just imagine, though, for a moment, how many invoices Mariano Rivera would have received during his time. All the bats that he broke. I mean, when he was taking his farewell tour, there was actually a team that made a chair out of all the broken bats that he had against his club. Yikes.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
The Brewers are on the road this week, but they'll be coming home for a 10-game homestand against the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the White Sox. It's Brewers Community Foundation week as well. The ultimate auction kicked off on Tuesday and runs through Tuesday, May the 12th. Fans can bid on all kinds of memorabilia and unique experiences, like having yourself and seven friends take a tour of the Miller Park roof before gates open, or sitting in the owner's seats next to the Brewers dugout for a ball game. And for a full list of the ultimate auction items and daily events, visit brewers.com/BCF week. It's also Brewers 5 County Week, where residents of Milwaukee, Ozaukee, Racine, Washington, and Waukesha counties save 50% on select seats. Mother's Day is also around the corner during the next homestand. We'll have more updates on what's going on Mother's Day here at Millard Park, but it's never too early to plan a special day for Mom. That's going to do it this week for Brewers on Tap. Don't forget again to tweet your questions to @Brewers throughout the week using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. Again, special thanks to our great guests, Monte Harrison of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers and coaching assistant Joe Crawford for joining us on the program. I'm Jeff Levering. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap. Brewers.